My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Go to Cheeselandia.com to learn more, and if it's for you, sign up.
This week on Meatin' 3, we head into the second part of our mini-series on global trade, where we talk about all things sweet, from chocolate and sugarcane to the cultural festival that accompanied the growth of the date industry in the U.S.
They're using this romance and fantasy to say, dates are exotic and you should consume them.
I'd like to think of the food that we eat as archaeological artifacts, in part because the history of humanity is in the stands in your produce market.
It's not like other foods. We have very personal feelings about chocolate.
Tune in to Meatin' 3, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Life's a Banquet, a show about all things edible, spreadable, pourable, tossable, munchable, crunchable with your host, me, a grumpy person, and...
me, a grumpy person.
Okay, great. Two fucking grumps who don't like football getting ready to talk about some football.
Why are you grumpy, Dara?
I think it's just, life's just getting to me.
It sounds like you just did a line of cocaine.
I did. And now I feel better. And now, miraculously, I'm not grumpy anymore.
I guess it could have been a line of literally anything, but I just assumed.
I thought this was a baseball episode, so I'm here sitting with Daryl Strawberry. We're doing coke.
Was that his thing? He was into coke?
Oh, yeah. All those 86 Mets. Mm. All those. You got Keith Hernandez, Doc Gooden. They all loved the blow.
So you know about some sports, just not football.
I really only know about the 86 Mets from a nostalgic point of view because a lot of my friend group in high school and college was a bunch of graffiti writing dudes who were all into the 86 Mets. And I was like, that's cool. And then I got into it too. The mystique behind how a group of folks played a sports game and then also won the World Series while smoking in the dugout and doing lines of cocaine in the dugout between games is miraculous. And they made an album called Get Metsmerized.
The 80s were a crazy time. I have a little child's vintage sweatshirt from the 86 Mets. It's very cute. I can fit it into it. Yeah.
Oh, what an excellent find. Give it here. I had an 86 Mets vintage hat that was my grandpa's, and I wore it at Brucey a lot. And one of the general managers took it one day and threw it out. And I was like, where's my hat? He's like, oh, I threw it out. It was dirty.
What?
I threw it out. It was dirty. Okay. Whatever. It's just a hat. It's fine. Let it go, Tangora. Let it go. Let it go.
Was it dirty?
I mean, sure. It was probably dirty. I can't imagine it was that dirty that it needed to be removed from the planet.
You know, the best way to wash your hat, Dara, is to put it in the dishwasher. Okay.
That's a pro tip. I have recently heard that. I love it. And I'm going to get another hat and get it dirty and put it in the dishwasher. Why am I grumpy? I don't know. I just feel, I guess part of it is that it's the third day after a snow day today in New York. And so the mystique behind and glamour of the fresh powder snow is gone. And now everyone's just trying to slodge their way through mushy snow. And it's just I don't know. I think it's all just a little much for me.
I saw a meme or something, whatever you call those things. I guess it's a meme. Recently, and it showed the perfectly clean plowed streets of New York. And then it showed all the snow piled up on the sidewalks. And it was why do we treat cars better than people? And I was like, oh my God, I never thought of that before.
That's a very interesting point.
Yeah. I know it's because, emergency vehicles have to get through, but it doesn't really make sense that the sidewalk shoveling is left up to the owner of the property directly in front of or behind the sidewalk.
Totally. Yeah. And it took me an hour and a half to like park my car after I moved it today. And I was just like, it's fine. It's nothing that happened to me today was like terrible. I just felt very busy and like I wasted a lot of time in the car and then also shoveling out my car. And my neighbor, who I love, we have such a great relationship. He's elderly. He's like probably 70. So he's not elderly, elderly, but he's older.
That's a Trump supporter though, right?
He is, but I overlook that because I don't know. He's a nice person and to me and whatever. We shoot the shit. He's an old school Italian guy, whatever. So I'm always doing favors, giving him food, doing stuff. And likewise, you know, like we help each other out. I asked him to borrow his shovel. He said no.
What? What was his reason?
He didn't give me one. He was just like, didn't answer my text at first. And then I'm outside. I was like, can I borrow that shovel? And he's like, you know, you don't have your own shovel. And I was like, what? And I was like, all right, whatever. So freaking thank the Lord, Mark from Lucali gave me a shovel. And I scratched the shit out of my car getting the snow off with it.
Yeah. I had a shovel when I had a car in New York.
Well, you know what? I just don't think I have room for another object in this house. The shovel will not do.
You leave it in the car.
Well, then what am I going to shovel my bodies with?
If you need a shovel for bodies, you should buy one and then you'll have it for also snow.
See, the thing is, a grave digging shovel is different than a snow shovel.
Mm. You actually don't even want... I didn't have a snow shovel. I had an ice breaking shovel. So it was better for digging bodies because it had the sharp pointed edge.
That's so smart.
You could kill people with it, you could bury them with it, and you can break ice around your car. You know, because I was in New York when I had my car when those crazy snowstorms were happening where you couldn't even see your car because the plow had just buried it under piles and piles of snow. And
right,
offsides parking was canceled for like 3 weeks, so I just didn't go get my car, and then it was like in a frozen car-shaped shell.
That's hilarious.
You couldn't like get the wheels unstuck. I had to have like innocent bystanders came and helped me get my car out. It was like a very wonderful time.
Yeah, that's like one of the only times in New York City. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that. I feel like there's a camaraderie in New York City all the time. But it's one of the biggest moments of camaraderie after it snows. And people like today, I saw a bunch of strangers helping each other push cars out of the way and shovel snow. Somebody like ran up to me as I was shoveling my car and he's like, I'll help you shovel your car out. And I was like, okay. He's like, if I can take your spot when you leave.
That's fair.
I was like, that's great. So I got out twice as fast. I want to go back to the point about digging graves quickly.
Wait, no, I have another snowstorm story that I just
okay, go ahead.
So during one of the snowstorms, I'm traveling. It might have been the one where we had to close down Brucey like for the night, but we all ended up having to walk home. Because it was illegal to
Yes, that was a big snowstorm.
Yeah, it was illegal to even like be on the streets, or it was definitely illegal to drive on the streets. They made it so it wasn't allowed. But anyway, so I was getting a Uber to work. It was like a rideshare Uber. And so there was someone else in the car with me, another stranger. And the guy literally was like, I just moved here from Africa. I've never driven on snow. I've barely even seen snow. Like he had a car, like this teeny tiny little car that could barely like, you know, it was only like an inch off the ground. So of course we get stuck. And so we have to, he and the passenger get out and push the car, and I drove it. Like I drove it and like pushed the gas to get us over the frozen spot that we were stuck in. It was hilarious.
What a tale, huh? Look at that. Friends who didn't know they were friends yet, helping each other get out of a tight spot.
Yeah, well, we're not friends.
Oh, okay. It ended there. You're not friends anymore. I got it. It's cool. I would have shared my number. I remember that snowstorm, you and me and Luke and George left together. And I was like trying to beg you to come to my house and hang out. But I don't think you did. But that was weird. I don't remember any other time in the history of the world when like we were in such trouble for the snow. They're like, you guys better get home. There's like a curfew. They're like, you'll be arrested if you're out playing in the snow. Why was it? Was it like snowing daggers or something? What was the issue?
I just think that they're like, they closed the subways. That's what they did. They closed the subways at like 11 or something. And then it was illegal to drive. So you couldn't get a car. You couldn't get an Uber.
Get the fuck. Let me guess. Bill de Blasio was the mayor then, I bet.
I don't know.
Thanks for nothing. Yes, he was. Thanks for nothing, you groundhog squishing fucking buffoon.
Yeah. So I don't even, how many inches of snow did we even get that time?
Oh, I don't remember. It was probably nothing. Like 12 to 15, that's generally as much as it snows here. Except for in like, I remember like 2012, it snowed like 3 feet. And that was pretty intense.
I think that's when I had the ice shovel.
That was a wild one. There was like buses stuck in the street. I was like, what is happening? It was just a literal snowpocalypse. Bill de Blasio, speaking of your favorite mayor, America's mayor.
Ew!
just kidding. We all know your favorite mayor is Pete Buttigieg. oh, my God, no. The world.
That's transportation secretary to you, okay?
that's transportation secretary Buttigieg, if you please. I remember my dad's favorite thing. So my dad's three-year anniversary of his death was on Monday. And then Groundhog Day was yesterday. And my dad's favorite story ever was about he loved to talk about every Groundhog Day, how I guess, I don't know, years and years ago, Bill de Blasio was holding a groundhog, as the mayors like to do on Groundhog Day, and he dropped it. And my dad, I've looked for this in the news. I haven't found any confirmation of this story, but his story, and he stuck to it, was that after he dropped the groundhog and like its bones broke, then he then tripped and stepped on it and crushed it with his foot.
Oh my God. That groundhog did die though, right?
It did die. Yes. But like my dad just like loved to talk about how de Blasio squished it with his foot because he was a big like buffoon.
He is a buffoon.
Oh my God. The thought of it is so horrible, to like crush a groundhog to death under your foot. What a lot, like, ugh. But anyway, RIP, Dad. this bud's for you.
RIP, groundhog.
Yes, that's true. The groundhog and my dad share death in common. They're both dead.
And they both probably hate Bill de Blasio, I'm assuming.
Definitely. They're just like sitting there in hell or heaven, just waiting for de Blasio. Anyway.
Yeah.
Funny stuff.
Did you see that Screech died?
No, I didn't. He died?
Yeah, he had lung cancer.
Oh my God. I saw like a week ago that he went to the hospital because he had cancer. Wow, that's terrifying to know that it can happen so quickly like that.
He was only 44. His symptoms were just that he felt pain like all over his whole body. And then he went in and they were like, oh no, you have stage 4 lung cancer. And then he died.
Oh my God. That is my worst fear, truly. To like have, like, it's the weird bad spot in between dying suddenly, which is like, okay, that sucks. You didn't get to say goodbye, but at least you just die suddenly. You don't know. And then the other side of the coin is like having some time to process, say goodbye, do some things you would want to do. But then that's like the weird middle ground. It's like you kind of die pretty suddenly, but also not really.
I feel like if I had like a, you know, 6 months to live or whatever, I would have way too much anxiety to be able to like go to the Eiffel Tower or whatever people do in the movies.
Yeah, totally.
The movies are always like, don't cry for me. It's okay.
I'm at the Eiffel Tower. This baguette is absolutely divine.
Don't worry about me. It's cool. Or they're also just like doing all kinds of shit and not telling everyone that they're going to die. But I would be like a disaster. I'd be a basket case. I would tell everyone that I was going to die. And I would be stressed out and cry all the time. And I don't understand. In the movies, people are just like E-Mom, it's too Tommy in. She just like goes out and has this wild sex affair with a road trip. And then she dies.
That's mad. Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen that movie since it was released 25 years ago.
It's a really recent blockbuster film.
Oh, I have a quick correction section I would like to bring up right now from last week's episode. I owe a huge apology to director Alexander Payne.
Oh, no.
Because his movies, I didn't really know much about him. And so I already mentioned last week when researching Sideways that I thought it was a stinker and I was going to laugh about how dumb it was. And it turned out to be great. And so I went from there and watched three other of his movies, all which were great.
What are they?
I watched The Descendants.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's based on a book.
It's quite good, though. So that is a very good movie. And I watched About Schmidt.
I don't, that movie's good.
Yes, it is good. It really is. It's delightful. It's funny. It's like fun to watch. It's heartfelt. I really liked it. Okay. And then I watched, oh my gosh, Citizen Ruth, which was great. It was
what is that one?
Laura Dern. And it's like basically she's like addicted to drugs and she's kind of wayward and has a bunch of kids. And so she gets in trouble with the law and the judge is like, the only way I'm not going to send you to jail is if you get an abortion, because they found out she was pregnant and they didn't want her having any more kids. So the whole film is like about like pro-abortion people trying to get her to like abort it and anti-abortion folks trying to get her to keep it. It's campy though. It's kind of like, it reminded me a lot of Raising Arizona.
Really?
Yeah. It was really good. It was great. She was great. It was so good.
I love, wait, Laura Dern.
Laura Dern. Daughter of Bruce Dern.
I watched The Mothman Prophecies last night, which has Laura Linney in it.
And oh, that's like, a different Laura.
I was like, she really went out there, bold, whichever one came first, to be the other blonde Laura, you know?
Sure. I mean, there can only be one. That's why I'm looking forward to their celebrity death match.
Well, there can only be one in Jurassic Park, and that's Laura Dern. Sorry.
That's Lori Dern. Lori, yeah. Laura Dern. Real name, Laurie Dern. Oh, Jesus, okay. Christ, superstar. Well, should we get into our topic for this week?
Yeah, let's get into it. We're going to talk about the old Super Bowl.
Are you ready for some football?
We're passionate about football here.
Yeah, totally. The only thing I like about football is Colin Kaepernick, just for the record. And I do like Super Bowl foods.
Yeah. I do too. I like Super Bowl foods and I like Super Bowl commercials. And that's why I'm going to talk to you guys about Super Bowl commercials. Are you ready?
Well, I want to mention one other thing I do like about football is the Puppy Bowl.
I love the Puppy Bowl.
I mean,
I also love the Westminster Dog Show, which I think.
No, that's on Thanksgiving.
Oh, Thanksgiving. Well, I love that too. Okay.
That's cute. Yeah, that's cute. It's good stuff. Good dog content.
What a great thing to happen to us as Americans. Okay, so I got all this information from a zany little website called Wikipedia.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, it's zany.
How zany is it?
So I just want to read its definition of Super Bowl commercials because it gave me a chuckle. Super Bowl commercials, colloquially known as Super Bowl ads, are high-profile television commercials featured on the Super Bowl. Okay, wow. So now we're all on the same page. According to Wikipedia, they are also iconic. Mm-hmm. And do you know why?
No, Nicole, why?
Because everyone on the fucking planet is watching. According to Nielsen, of the top 20 most watched television shows in the history of the world, only one is not a Super Bowl.
Which one?
The finale of MASH. Duh.
Wow, that is not what I thought you were going to say. I thought you were going to say the finale of the Bob Newhart show.
That was also pretty high up there, I think.
I know, I'm not kidding. I'm serious.
So Super Bowl viewership reached an all-time peak in the year 2015. Patriots versus the Seahawks, when 114.4 million souls watched the Super Bowl.
Whoa. Wowie-wee.
But since then, viewership has been falling. They blame it on streaming. I blame it on the fact that football's stupid. Yes. 98.2 million people watched in 2019. 99.9 million watched in 2020. And just imagine all of those almost 100 million people blissfully unaware that COVID-19 was about to kill all of them.
It's not funny, but it also is a little bit, only because like it was one of the last big things before, you know, the world completely changed that. It's, and like, of course, like,
throwing potato chips into their mouths. COVID was already here in February, but.
Exactly. They're just licking nacho dust or Cheeto dust off their fingers and their friends' fingers. And little did we know.
Yeah. We're like, huh, we haven't had a big snow this year. I guess we're going to have another mild winter.
Yeah. At least, thank the Lord, Eminem didn't surprisingly show up like he did at the Oscars. prepped into the Super Bowl. Although we don't know what's going to happen this year. He'll probably be there.
He could be watching it. since the year 2000, CBS has had a show that just chronicles all the best Super Bowl ads that air that day. So,
wow.
They figured out that people just want to watch it for the ads, not for the actual sports, where men literally give each other concussions to the point where they lose their minds and kill themselves and have
and their wives and their ex-wives
shoot themselves in the chest so their brains can be studied. Spiked up.
It truly is. Have you ever seen that movie Any Given Sunday?
Yes.
I've seen
a lot of football movies where someone who claims to not like football.
Yeah, I've seen Any Given Sunday, and I just remember that it was so striking to me, like how much these people hurt themselves during the game.
Also, I watched Friday Night Lights. Also, the biggest football movie ever made is
Varsity Blues. Oh, Rudy. I have a Rudy t-shirt, dude. I found a fucking Rudy t-shirt at like a Salvation Army like 2 years ago, and I just wore it like the other day. Single guys out there, call me.
It's the number one football movie because it's set in Indiana. My dad actually doesn't even like this Super Bowl movie, so what can you do?
Wait, Rudy is a Super Bowl movie? It's a football movie. He doesn't call it a Super Bowl.
Sorry.
Did I miss something in there? How good could this kid be?
College football. They don't go to the Super Bowl. They go to like the Rose Bowl or something. I don't know.
It's funny.
Okay. So as you may or may not imagine, it costs a lot of money to get a commercial on the Super Bowl because allegedly people are going to watch it and then figure out for the very first time what Coca-Cola is and then buy some. So, in 1867, I'm just kidding. It's 1967.
You just want to see if I'm still listening.
In 1967, Super Bowl I, which is the only Super Bowl that I can correctly pronounce, because of the Roman numerals. Super Bowl I, it cost $37,500 to buy ad space.
Okay.
In the year 2000, it cost $2.2 million. In 2015, it cost $4.5 million. And in the year 2020, that's $5.6 million for 30 seconds of airtime.
That doesn't seem, like, I know this is going to sound wild of me to say, it doesn't seem like that much for some reason.
Well, you still have to pay to film the commercial after you bought that airspace.
That's true. I guess I'm just thinking that like a company like, I don't know, Motorola, your favorite.
Motorola? Are they even still around?
Look, I'm just thinking that a company like Pets.com or Napster.
They're going to come later. Has a lot of
loose cash lying around. Oh, Pets.com. Oh, thank the Lord. Okay. I'm just saying it doesn't seem like, I would have thought maybe more, but I'm glad to know that I can afford it. I'm going to do one next year.
You should. Okay. In Canada, even though apparently a bunch of people watch the Super Bowl in Canada, I don't know why. I guess they don't have football teams there. Who knows? You actually can't watch the Super Bowl commercials because there's like a broadcasting act that makes it so you have to watch locally aired commercials no matter what show you're watching.
Wow, what a disappointment.
There's even like a lawsuit about it. They tried to like, they went to court and they're like, we have to get these Super Bowl commercials on TV because the Canadian customers are demanding it. And Justin Trudeau was like, no, that's not true. He had nothing to do with it. But the courts basically like overturned whatever ruling. And then people in Canada can never see a Super Bowl commercial. I'm sorry, guys.
Oh, I'm sorry, too.
So now we're moving on to everyone's favorite part, which is where I describe a commercial to you.
Praise Jesus.
I highly recommend that you watch these on the internet if any of them sound intriguing, because I'm not going to do the best job.
Do the voices.
So, in 1970, Dick Butkus, a Chicago Bears lineman.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I know this person. I've heard this name before, but what is a worse name than Dick Butkus? Can we just please?
We don't know. They didn't have to. They did first. So many things didn't have to happen. They didn't have to name him Richard. But if they did, they also did not have to call him Dick.
Dick Butkus? I mean, like, that is the most make fun of me name available.
Yeah, but maybe, you know, 1970 was a simpler time. Who knows? So he's a Chicago Bears lineman. He had a commercial where he endorsed Prestone antifreeze, and the tagline was, "Plugging holes is my business."
Of course it is, Butkus. Dick Butkus. I mean, that's a fucking, that's an easy hit there.
I think he was talking about his role as a lineman, but we'll never know.
Sounds like he was talking about his role as a Butkus.
In 1973, Noxzema, described by Wikipedia as a lotion company, had pre-Charlie's Angels Farrah Fawcett, Cream Joe Namath, who is a famous football player. Maybe you've heard of him.
I have, yes.
So she just smears Noxzema brand shaving cream all over his face. Who knew they had a shaving cream? Not I, because it was a while before I was born and way longer before I started shaving my face. Okay, so here's a Super Bowl commercial, because I'm a fan. You know, I used to watch them for the commercials. In 1974, Master Locks, who apparently still makes commercials, like this is a tradition that started in 1974, they were like, oh, you know, it would be super cool to demonstrate how tough our locks are, or if we have a commercial where someone shoots a rifle at them and they don't destruct. this idea was originally like conceived years before, but people were like, oh, no, we shouldn't do that because people will try it at home. But then 1974 rolls around. They're like, who cares? Let's just do it. Sure. So they still do a version of that ad today. I just don't remember. I guess because I don't give a shit about locks or guns.
Yeah, totally. When I see a lock commercial come on, I just zone right out.
Yeah, I just put my face right in the nachos. But they say, they claim, Wikipedia claims rather, that this Super Bowl commercial is directly responsible for their increase of sales from 1973 to 1994, from 35 million to 200 million. I'd like to see the proof on that. Because you can't directly link a commercial to sales, you know?
Totally. It is a hard, it's a hard thing to trace.
In 1980, this is a heartwarming one. Coca-Cola, maybe you've heard of it, had a Super Bowl commercial called Hey Kid Catch.
Oh, where love it.
Mean Joe Green is offered a Coca-Cola by a little kid, and he drinks it all in one drink, and he turns around and throws his jersey at the kid, his game-worn jersey, and he's like,
sweaty jersey all over his face.
And the kid's like, this is disgusting.
He is, but then that kid also retired to, like, Fort Lauderdale with that jersey money years later.
Yeah, for sure. That commercial won a Clio, and in 2011, it was declared the best Super Bowl commercial of all time.
Wow. I mean, I have seen that commercial a couple times. It's fine. Is it the best ever? Is it better than the Clydesdales with their fur hooves? The Budweiser frogs? I mean, I guess I'm a sucker for... I'm revealing myself as a Budweiser enthusiast.
So... yeah, best commercial of all time, debatable. There's tons of parodies of it. There's a Simpsons parody. There is a Coke Zero parody where they parody their own commercial. Look it up. It's out there, people. Another commercial you may not necessarily remember because it came out the year you were born, but the Apple Macintosh 1984 commercial was a Super Bowl commercial. And that was directed by Ridley Scott, which I did not know.
Wow. Yeah, that's my first memory. That's my first memory.
So, I mean, I guess some people may not be familiar with it, but essentially it's a, you know, a scene from 1984, the book, bunch of drones listening to a guy drone at them. A hot lady in a, like, cute 80s running outfit comes in and swings a hammer right through the screen. And they're like, 1984 is not going to be like 1984. And everyone's like, yay, Steve Jobs, you're so cool.
Wow. Wow. That's very provocative.
Mm-hmm. You've seen this commercial, right?
I don't think so.
Really?
I mean, I'm sure I have, but it's not ringing a bell.
Well, I hope that our listeners have seen it, but I guess you all maybe are too young. It was really, I don't know. I've seen it a lot. I didn't see it when it came out because I was four. But
I'm picturing you watching it like every day when you get up.
Speaking of your favorite beer, Budweiser parent company Anheuser-Busch set up a deal with the NFL so that they got all of their Super Bowl slots at a huge, huge discount for many years. All the way through Super Bowl 50. Yeah.
Oh, sounds like someone's doing some dick butt kissing.
Good one.
Zing, butt kiss. Take that.
They have had a Clydesdales commercial in every fucking Super Bowl since 1975, but that ended in 2017. So 1975 to 2017.
Why? Why did it end?
You know, I have no idea. They probably killed all the Clydesdales or something.
Clydesdales are extinct?
Have you ever seen a Clydesdale in real life? They're so big.
I have such a furry ankle. They make furry ankles look great.
They're so big, though. They're, like, terrifyingly huge. They're, like, the size of a bear, but they're a horse.
I know. It is too big. I'm glad they're extinct. Thank God.
In 1987, we got to see, for the very first time, Spuds McKenzie, the dog, the beer fan, the legend.
Yep.
In 1995, the Budweiser Frogs came. I remembered that commercial, but I didn't. I was like, how did this become one of the most popular commercials on earth? And I rewatched it today, and I still am like, I have the same question.
Yeah, beats me. Obviously, I'm not interested in it whatsoever, as I hate frogs more than anything else in this natural world.
I mean, frogs learning to read, sure.
Look, I don't want to talk about this anymore. Let's move on.
Okay. In 1999, we got the What's Up commercial. Or What's Up? I don't know. I can't do
it. No! What's Up?
No, don't do it.
That wasn't me.
You fell into my trap.
It's impossible not to do it, even though you don't want to.
So this is an iconic commercial, to quote Wikipedia, but you guys probably remember it. This is from 99. You all were alive. Three, four friends call each other on the phone. They say what's up to each other for like
they say what's up
an extended period of time.
Call me again. Still single. Please call me. I can do the what's up impression.
I also want to tell you, this is a great opportunity for me to share. I, one of the few people, watched the 2008 two-minute follow-up movie where the same, I believe it was the same director. Don't quote me on that, though. He made a follow-up commercial where it's all the same actors, but the first frame, the original guy is sitting in his house and it's being foreclosed on. And his other friend has broken neck and a broken arm. And then his other buddy is calling him from fighting in Iraq.
What? Don't you think this is in poor taste to have someone sitting getting their house foreclosed on in 2008? Or is it supposed to be like that?
That's what he's saying.
He has We're in guy, on the joke. He's in on the joke. Got it.
Yeah, this guy's lost his house. His friend is fighting in Iraq.
Okay.
His other buddy can't afford to get painkillers for his broken neck and broken arm.
Oh my God, his other friend is Barack Obama.
And then his other friend who calls in on the intercom is getting killed by a hurricane.
Oh my God. first of all, I've loved if the same director made it, I love his ability to laugh at himself.
Well, I think he's mostly being like, the world is really fucked up, you guys, but I'm going to try to make a funny follow-up commercial just to remind you all of it.
Right. Very good. Love it. I'm going to watch that. I wonder what they're doing now, those guys. No,
they already look so old in the remake.
Yeah, they're probably all perished by this point. Sorry, RIP to the What's Up guys.
In the year 2000, that Super Bowl was called the .com Super Bowl because so many commercials were for .com companies such as E-Trade, Pets.com, etc.
RIP to Pets.com.
Most of the companies that advertised during that Super Bowl shut down before the year was out because the .com bubble was deflating and it eventually burst around the year that I graduated from college so that I couldn't get a job. So how many bubbles have burst in your lifetime, Zara?
Well, it was a cold night in January 1984. We'll start there. A lot of bubbles. I have no bubbles left.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just, it's a funny moment in time because all of these .com companies and everyone was like, pets.com, it's so great.
What did you even get? You got pets on it or you got stuff for your pets? I joke about pets.com almost every day and I don't know what they sold, if they sold pets or pet supplies.
I think they sold supplies, so you don't have to go to the store. It was the beginning of, like, you don't have to go to the store.
Right. Gone too soon.
In 2014, Coca-Cola, it's back, had a commercial called It's Beautiful. And it showed the first same-sex couple to ever be in a fucking Super Bowl commercial, which is insane. Mm. And what's even more insane is that it had a multicultural theme. So the song that was sung in it was sung in different languages. Mm. And there was a backlash of anti-immigration cool dudes who started a hashtag called Speak American.
Oh, and my said God.
They should not have had different languages spoken in that commercial because that's not what Americans do.
Right. No one's ever spoken a different language in America. Whenever. Okay. Whatever. Yeah. We all agree. Okay. These people are terrible.
So I thought I remembered a lot more Super Bowl commercials, but I didn't. So I had to go to the internet for the best Super Bowl commercials. But if you have one, submit it to our hotline.
Yes, please. 1-900-DICK-BUCKUS.
The ones that I pulled up are the Ray Charles, You Got the Right One, Baby, commercial. Mm-hmm. That's a great one. It's a great commercial. Just a classic, good old-fashioned commercial, you know?
Sure.
And are you going to go through specific Doritos commercials?
No.
Okay, great. So I also have the Doritos Crystal Ball commercial where a man and another man are talking to each other outside of a vending machine at their work. And this guy's like, this Crystal Ball, it's real. And he's like, dude, it's not real. And he's like, yes, it is. And he's like, I want to have some free Doritos. And he turns and he smashes the vending machine glass with his crystal ball.
Doritos has some good commercials, for sure.
There's the Cindy Crawford Pepsi commercial where she's just standing there looking super hot, drinking a Pepsi. And like,
that one's fucked up, though.
Underage boys are like, hey.
They're like really underage. And they're like really like, I mean, we find out at the end that they're fiending for the Pepsi, but they're like getting, like, we're watching two like 9-year-olds like get horny. It's really awkward.
And I think the greatest commercial from a Super Bowl is the 1984 classic, Where's the Beef?
It's great with the old ladies. Where's the beef?
The star of that, Where's the Beef woman, was 80 years old when she made that commercial.
It's a great commercial.
You know, don't let society tell you when your acting career is over, okay?
Absolutely. And don't settle for too little beef. Where is the beef? Okay? That's what I'd like to know. Call me. That's amazing, Nicole. What a great roundup of commercies.
Oh, no problem.
Cool.
Let's take a break.
All right, let's take a fucking break. I need to go lay down. Okay.
Okay.
My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Wisconsin cheese has proven time and time again to be a delicious expression of craft, hard work, and tradition. As a Cheeselandian, I am able to share a Gouda experience with fellow cheese and food lovers nationwide, as well as connect with cheese producers and cheesemongers, taking my love of cheese to another level. I invite you to join Cheeselandia because during these difficult times, it has been even more important to take it easy and get cheesy. The Cheeselandia community and events have been the glue helping to keep us together and connected, and I would love it if you would join me. And let's face it, if you hear the word cheese and get a little hungry, then you've found a place you can call home. To find out more about Cheeselandia, go to cheeselandia.com.
We're back. I laid down.
Okay.
Took a long nap.
And I just sat here patiently waiting for you to come back.
You just looked at me. You looked at your phone and then at the wall.
I'm like, where is she?
Nicole already gave away what I was going to talk about, but that's okay.
Yeah. No, I didn't. No one was listening anyway.
I'm sorry, listener, if you're still with us. I'm talking today about the best snack and something that I feel like is quintessential Super Bowl. Wouldn't you say that a Dorito is quintessential Super Bowl snack? If you were going to think about the chip of the Super Bowl, would you think Dorito, Nicole?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. Me too. Now, before we get into this, I'm going to need to know something about you that I'm very shocked that I don't already know because I know what a chip fan you are. Are you a Cool Ranch or are you Nacho Cheese? I don't.
I think you know.
I think you're Nacho.
That's right.
Okay. How do you feel about Cool Ranch?
It's fine. If it's the only chip there, I'll eat it.
I love it, but I don't prefer it to Nacho, and I think people who do are psychopaths.
Mm-hmm.
I think people who do use snow shovels to dig graves.
Imagine going to the store and having an option between the two and choosing Cool Ranch. I just can't fathom it.
That's a red flag. Although, I think both, have you ever eaten them together in tandem?
Probably, I'm sure.
That's good. That's good eating. That's eating good in the neighborhood.
TBH, my favorite flavor is salsa verde, but you can't find that shit anywhere.
Oh, well, you're going to absolutely love the end of my story when I talk to you about all the wacky flavors that the Doritoverse has to offer us. So I got a lot of this information from Mental Floss, and I'm going to just get right the hell into it. Doritos translates to little golden things, which is adorable.
I did not know that.
Me neither. Some people say that they were invented in Disneyland in like the 60s. Apparently there was a rep for Alex Food, which supplied. Okay, so Fritos came first. And they were ripped off from some, quote unquote, a Mexican man selling extruded corn chips. So there's a difference in the way you make tortilla chips and Fritos. And Fritos are made using extruded corn, almost how you would like make pasta, but with corn. Not without the like nixtamalization that they use to make tortilla chips. So anyway.
So interesting.
Fritos came first, and they had a Casa de Fritos in Disneyland. And when the rep who supplied Casa de Fritos in Disneyland stopped by, he saw that the cooks were throwing out, like, unused tortillas. And he was like, you guys should throw those into the fryer and sell them as chips. So that's lore. We don't know if that's true. What most people say is that Arch West, who was the marketing executive for Frito-Lay, was with his family on vacation in SoCal in 1964, and he brought a quote-unquote grease-smeared bag of toasted tortillas at a roadside check. And then so he brought that idea to Frito-Lay in like 1965. And then in 66, they were storming shelves in America. But guess what? They didn't have any flavored dust on them. They were plain.
Right.
I mean, interesting. You can't find a plain Dorito now. I almost would want to know what one is. It just a Tostito, you think?
Yeah, it's just a corn chip.
I know, but something about it just like intrigues me. I want to see a naked Dorito. So sue me. So in 19...
You can rinse one off in
the sink.
That's
true. You know what? I've licked them clean many a time as a child and then eaten the like soggy licked version afterwards. Kids are weird. Especially when left alone for too long in a latchkey situation. So, my mom just comes home. She's like, been gone for 9 hours. She's like, what have you been doing? I'm like, well, I licked this whole bag of Doritos completely clean. Okay, so in 1968, they introduced taco-flavored Doritos.
Which I also love.
I've never had the taco. So interesting.
I think you have, because they were in the 80s. Huh. They were like ubiquitous. How do you say that word?
Ubiquitous.
You remember the old bags with the see-through window in the center?
Yes, yes. Loved that.
I feel like you might have just had one and not realized that it wasn't nacho cheese. They were everywhere.
Were they similar tasting?
They had a different flavor, if I recall, but I could be making that up. Because they re-released them. Anyway, you probably are going to talk about this, but...
Well, so first of all, I'd like to say that in an era where everything seems to be being redone in like its earliest form of its nostalgia, I don't understand why the Doritos bags haven't switched back to their earlier design, because it seems like so much more, I don't know, it seems more desirable than that like 1999 Dorito bag. Like, you know what I mean? The crazy, like,
aggressive.
Yeah, but it's also just the, yeah, cool.
Because the old Cool Ranch bag is so cute and chic. But
super.
Yeah. When they did the throwback taco flavor, they had the throwback bag. I think it's like in the summertime they do it. I think they should go back.
I personally really think they should go back. The bag, it's just not quite right anymore. Or just redo it all together. So anyway, the nacho flavor came in 1972 and Cool Ranch came out in 1986. They tweaked the recipe in 92 to eliminate Dorito breath. I've heard the term Dorito breath, and certainly if you eat Doritos, you have like a garlicky, very pungent breath. But I mean, like, do you ever remember it being worse before 1992?
No, but I wasn't like aware of my breath before 1992, you know?
Yeah, you were just like a 12-year-old who was just like very self-conscious about Dorito breath. You're like, I would, but my breath. I wouldn't. I would partake in this Dorito munching party, but my breath. Okay. In 1984, Doritos was taking in $1.3 billion a year, which seems like a lot of money for corn chips. But anyway, PepsiCo invested $50 million in what the Times called the costliest redesign in Frito-Lay history. And that is when they like did the kind of like crazy Dorito bag. The revamped Doritos boasted stronger flavor while each chip was 15% thinner and 20% larger.
They were thinner?
Yeah, they made them thinner.
That's like a big percentage of thinness. I guess they were thicker, like regular tortilla chips back in the day?
I guess. I mean, like they must have been like a restaurant-style tortilla chip.
I have no memory of that.
So the new chips, now this I find very funny. The new chips also had rounded corners where the previous versions had sharp points. A triumph for both eaters and fans. No more sliced open throats for you, Doritos eaters.
Eaters and fans, like there's a separate distinction.
Right, like some people just eat them for like work and some people eat them because they're fans. Some people are just like, God, if I have to eat another Dorito. It's easier to eat them without sharp corners, Jerry Vogel, director of corn products for Frito-Lay, says. And a lot of the scrap in the bottom of the bag was just from corners breaking off. It was just waste.
Okay, but there's still a lot of scrap in the bottom of the bag, Jerry Vogel.
Jerry Vogel, please call into the show. We have some questions for you. Jennifer Lawrence, apparently, while filming the David O. Russell film American Hustle, was eating so many Doritos and just like wiping them on her white outfit that the costume designer was like really angry with her, and she kept having to like take it off and get it cleaned.
What?
Yeah, and so the costume designer is quoted as saying, Jennifer Lawrence is, quote, a very, let's say, raw and intuitive young lady. And she's not against eating Doritos and snack food in her costume.
Okay, but she wiped. Like, what kind of person wipes their dirty hands on? I mean, I definitely have wiped my dirty hands on, like, my jeans before. Of but course. Not my white costume.
When you're about to be starring in a movie. But, oh my God. I mean, stars, they're just like us, am I right?
That or reminds not. Me, though, or worse. I follow a gossip blog on Instagram.com, and they recently reported that another Jennifer Aniston, will not turn down a Cool Ranch Dorito.
Good for her. Thank the Lord. I love her. And now I love her even more. In 2007, Nicole, they changed the game of the commercial game, that is, by introducing Crash the Super Bowl, a contest which challenged fans to create a Doritos commercial for the chance to win $100,000 and attend the big game. The competition ran for 9 years, with two fan-made commercials earning the highest number of views of all Super Bowl ads. Did I figure out which one those were? No, I didn't. My curiosity stopped there.
I watched one of the crowdsourced commercials.
What was it?
I don't know. It was boring. It was so boring I stopped watching it at the beginning.
Wow. I mean, they're only 30 seconds long. That's so funny.
Listen, it was no Snapple commercial where people in high school competed to have the best Snapple commercial. Didn't we talk about that on the show?
Yes. Those were amazing. The Snapple lady is incredible. So I pointed out one commercial which gave me a myriad of mixed emotions. It's one in which a man fakes his own death to be buried in a casket full of Doritos.
I watched that one as well.
And he's watching the Super Bowl inside of it. Now, this man could have been buried alive. the worst way to die. But for him, it was worth it so he could eat all the Doritos he wanted while he was laying in them. But as fate would have it, he cheered too hard for the Super Bowl. He rolled out of his casket onto the floor, revealing that he was, in fact, very much alive and covered in probably the most amount of Dorito dust that anyone ever has been.
So there's a lot to talk about in this commercial. So in the commercial, it's obvious that his wife doesn't know that he's faked his own death.
Right.
His buddies do know, and they're narrating it for us so we understand what's going on.
They've chosen not to speak up, even as his family mourns.
The reason that he faked his own death is so he could get 1 week off of work, and so he could achieve his dream of being buried in a casket filled with Doritos. And then it cuts to him inside the casket, fully alive, and eating Doritos, which he's completely surrounded with, just out of the bag, sprinkled into the thing.
Lots of bits.
And he's watching TV in there while everyone's at his funeral.
And also, farting into them, I'm sure.
If I'm to believe any other TV show that I've seen where someone gets stuck in a casket, you can't breathe in there. So,
yeah. It's a really bad plan. And it's really just, I think, in every way, a sign of all things that are wrong with America. From top to bottom. From capitalism to junk food. It really runs the gamut of the problematic series of problems that we have in this country. So now I want to talk to you, Nicole, about something that I think will make you chuckle. Yeah, I just want to mention, as with last week, when I re-listened to our episode, I want to really start by saying that, like, it's not a goal of mine to shame anyone for their taste or their budget, really, at all. So I hope that translates, and also now as well, with these disgusting Doritos flavors that are gross, and if you like them, you're a fucking serial killer.
Wait, hold on. Are you going to talk about 3D Doritos?
No, I'm not, but those were interesting. I liked them. They reminded me a little bit of Bugles.
I don't like Bugles.
I like Bugles a lot. And if someone was to send me, let's say, I don't know, a casket full of Bugles, I would accept their hand in marriage.
Ugh, they taste stinky, you know? They taste like the smell.
Maybe that's my problem. I'm sitting here eating way too many. Maybe if I could just quit Bugles once and for all.
When were 3D Doritos?
I have to imagine in the late 90s. There's no other time that history could have provided us with such a silly snack.
Oh, you can still, for the record, you can still purchase them.
Okay, great. So send one casket, please, to me, full of Bugles, which I haven't had since I was 7, and send a casket full of 3D Doritos to Nicole, and we'll bury ourselves in them.
They're going to release them in 2021. We're going to get them back. 3D Doritos, they're coming back, guys.
It's going to rain 3D Doritos as a sign of the apocalypse.
I remember them being good, but not having the same powdered flavor. Like, the flavor of the nacho wasn't the same as a flat Dorito in my teenage mind.
I would love to, because I love nothing more than Doritos on a sandwich, on like a turkey sandwich with cheese and mayonnaise, and my mouth is actually watering right now talking about this. But like, imagine a bunch of 3D Doritos and you can really squish it down. The sandwich starts really high and then you just give it a good swap and whap. Okay. Let's get into this, Nicole.
One more thing. I just want everyone to know. Yeah. The 3D Doritos are already back. They came back on Groundhog Day. So get out there and get them.
Get right out there. Just shut this episode off now. Pull over your car and run. Don't walk to your nearest convenience store. Okay. This is a section I've labeled as weird flavors. The first one is tuna mayo.
Is that in Japan and not America?
It is. Many of these are not, actually, none of these are in America. Many of them are in Japan and Korea and other places like Germany and France. Okay. Germany. I'm going to run through these. Like Germany and also France. Sausage.
Ew, Germany.
That was also in Japan. Damn. Cheese and almond.
Cheese and almond?
Yeah, cheese and almond. No, this is also in Japan. The most of them, I have to say, are from Japan and Korea.
This isn't a guessing game that you want me to guess the country?
You can. Fried chicken.
Not America? I guess Japan.
Yes, Japan. Fondue.
Germany.
Korea. France.
Korea. Mm-hmm.
Roe and mayo.
Japan.
Yes. Steak.
Steak. Japan.
Yes. Now, what do you think a steak chip taste like?
Probably good.
Probably good. You know what? Honestly, I'm sure all of these chips are good. They're chips. Most chips are good. There's only like a handful of chips in this world that I've tried where I'm like, ugh, I really don't like this.
Yeah, like shrimp chips.
Well, I like those. Yeah, those are good. Sesame chicken sounds delicious. Butter flavor. Please get at me.
A this butter one, flavored corn chip? I don't know.
I'm into it. I'll try anything once.
It probably tastes like popcorn.
It probably does, yeah. Winter crab. I'm not sure how that differs from summer crab. Maybe it's covered in snow. Okay, this one I thought was very strange. Fresh basil and smoked fresh Italian ham, which are cancel each other out. You can't be smoked and fresh. So which is it, Doritos? Are you smoked or are you fresh? Are you smoked? Are you fresh? Are you fresh or are you smoked? Fresh basil and smoked fresh Italian ham. This next one is maybe the only one I wouldn't want to try. Italian seafood pizza.
Oh, I would try it.
Okay. Stir fry. Sounds good. Overseas, they call Cool Ranch Cool American.
I knew
which
that.
Is an oxymoron. Okay. This one hails from different places in the Middle East. Yogurt and mint. Sounds great.
Yeah.
They also have tomato and onion salad.
What? That's a Dorito flavor?
Yeah, tomato and onion salad. I think that sounds very good.
Yeah, I would love
roasted that. Turkey comes out in Japan, and it comes in the shape of a Christmas tree.
I love it.
Well, also from Japan, they have corn soup.
Crispy, corn soup the chip?
Yeah, corn soup the chip. Crispy salmon, black garlic, which is a completely black chip with black powder on it.
Oh.
Clam chowder.
Okay.
Third degree burn.
What? That's what it's called?
It's a spicy. It's a spicy chip. It'll burn your mouth. It'll burn your throat. It'll burn your asshole. That's a three burns.
Okay. Wow.
Okay. It's Italian. Late night, all night cheeseburger.
Okay. I've had that before, I think.
And this one is from France. Camembert cheese.
Ew. Why would they make a Dorito? A corn chip with camembert? People are crazy.
I know. This world has just gone straight down the toilet. Am I right? Or am I right? Anyway, that's Doritos, folks. There's global more to learn, but not here.
Yeah, Doritos salsa verde, though. They're not on your list because I guess they're in America. Yeah. But I was obsessed with them my whole life, ever since I very first had one, and I can never find them anymore.
Sounds delicious. Before we get out of here, can I ask you, please, what are your three favorite Super Bowl kind of snacks? Like things you are known to have on the Super Bowl?
Nachos, obviously. Number one. Doritos.
Mmm.
And what I like to do with Doritos, which is maybe controversial, is dip my nacho cheese Doritos into ranch dressing.
Oh, that sounds great. That sounds great.
And then my third is just dip. I love every kind of dip that there is. And so, deconstructed nachos could be argued is dip. So.
Totally. I put my hand up on your hip. And when I dip, you dip. We dip.
That's the name of our restaurant, that whole thing.
It's an all dip restaurant. I love dip too. And I miss being able to share dip with people and trade viruses and diseases that wouldn't kill you, but just would keep you out of work for maybe a week so you could sleep in a casket full of nachos. So mine are, of course, nachos, number one, that goes without saying. Love pigs in a blanket.
Oh, yeah.
Never, ever get to have them. I'm going to go ahead and just throw one in here. I know it's kind of in the nacho vein, but I love 7-layer dip.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, layer upon layer of deliciousness. And I really like boneless buffalo wings.
Oh, me too. Although I just got yelled at recently because they're just chicken nuggets. And I was like, that's fine. They are just chicken nuggets. But I just want to call them boneless buffalo wings.
Yeah, but that is their name. I will sue you. You'll be hearing from my lawyer. So at our pop-up this week for the Zaza lasagna, we're doing nacho lasagna. And it's like layers of like nacho cheese that we're making, obviously, refried beans that are vegetarian, a bean chili that's vegetarian, cilantro and scallions. And then the top layer has nacho cheese and it gets topped with crushed up, finely ground Cool Ranch and nacho cheese Doritos in like a dust.
God, I love that.
I know, really fun.
So if you've ordered from us, you can be expecting a lot of Dorito dust in your future, people. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for tuning in here to this football show about football and penises. Sweat. Wow. Cleats.
Dick Butkus.
Dick Butkus. I would love to hear, like, on Jeopardy, who is Dick Butkus? I'm sorry, that's wrong. The answer is, who is O.J. Simpson?
Whoa.
Whoa, somebody. Now the party is getting started. Did somebody say O.J.? Okay, I feel like that's enough. Amanda has begged and pleaded with us to finish within 1 hour, and I guess we'll give it to her because she is a nice person.
She is a nice person.
Don't say we never get anything for you, Amanda. We're ending our Super Bowl episode early. Yes, thanks for listening. Nicole, I love you, and I hope that you get to eat piles and piles of chos. Are you going to eat chos?
Yeah, I'm going to make chos. I made salsa today. You know, I don't care if my family is into it or not. They're like, what is this smoothie? And I'm like, that's salsa. Shut up.
Yeah, good. Tell your family to fuck off. Everyone, not just you, everybody. Get your family on the phone right now and say, hey, family, I've had enough of you. Fuck off.
Get on the horn. Talk about Dick Butkus.
Yeah.
And go Colts.
Yeah, go Colts. Okay, great. All right, guys. Well, hasta la pasta la butt kiss. Bye. Life's Banquet is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, or connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click at the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.